You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to Digging Up Ancient Aliens. This is the podcast where we examine strange claims about alternative history and ancient alien in popular media. Do the claims hold water to an archaeologist, or are there better explanations out there? We are now on episode 57. I am Frederick, your humble instructor who will help you dance on the Occam's razor's edge. This time, we will continue our examination of the pyramids of ancient Egypt, especially the Great Pyramid of Khufu. We will investigate the Queen's Pyramids, take a trip along the Nile River on Khufu's sunboat, and sit down and read the Red Sea Scrolls. Ultimately, we will see that this marvel of human engineering was indeed done by a workforce organized by Khufu. As always, this episode sources are available at the episode website on diggingupancientaliens.com. There you also find contact info if you notice any mistakes or have any additional information. I can't start this episode before I thank all of those who support this show on Patreon or at the member portal. Thank you so much for your support. And if you want to enjoy content early and without ads, with exciting bonus material, I have some excellent news for you. Wait for the end of this episode and I will tell you just how you can arrange this. Now that we have finished our preparations, let's dig into the episode. Even if we did cover some methods to date the pyramids of Khufu in the last episode, I will continue to demonstrate the different sources we can use to date the pyramid's age. Because the age is something used by the ancient alien and the ancient astronaut proponents as a sort of smoking gun. And you will notice that their idea mainly builds on looking at only selected parts of the evidence. They basically cherry picks the data and use this to present their preferred narrative.
According to most Egyptologists, this miracle of engineering was constructed during a 20-year period by order of the pharaoh Khufu, sometime around 2500 BC. But many experts claim this dating is based on highly questionable data, and ancient astronaut theorists suggest the origins of the three pyramids at Giza are far more profound.
As usual, we are rarely given what this questionable data is. Sure, as a television program, of course, the ancient aliens have some limits on what and how much things they can present. But it's not really something we get to know even if we read the books of the people who appear on this show, such as Van Daniken, David Childress, Giorgio Tsoukalos, and all those other alternative history writers. And I think it's because the objective evidence is, well, a bit too overwhelming for them to disprove. Therefore, it's much easier for them to hanger on this idea that the pyramids are a mystery and all of that, and not really go into the evidence that we actually have. And if you listen to the past episodes, you will notice that we already have demonstrated how the Great Pyramid fits into the evolution of mortuary Egyptian architecture. How we see elements from earlier mortuary buildings still visible within the Great Pyramid. And let's not forget the elements in the Great Pyramids that are visible in later pyramid constructions. Then we have, you know, the carbon-14 samples, and that's because the ancient Egyptian used ash, organic material, in their mortar and cement, and we can use this organic ash to actually carbon-14 dating the pyramids. So we're not dating the stone, we're dating the organic material found within the stone. And it, as we discussed in the earlier episode, points back to the reign of Khufu. Now, a common objection we see from alternative history writers and alien proponents is about the Great Pyramid that you can't date stone. And this is a bit of a half-truth, to be honest. It is correct that we can't use carbon-14 to date stone. Very much correct there. Since, you know, stone and minerals tend to not be organic materials that can die. However, it is possible to date organic material within the rock. but that will just tell us when this rock was formed, not when it was used. And to be fair, organic material in granite is just as common as griffins. What we can use instead to date rock is surface luminescence dating. And this was something that was done by two authors named Leritzis and Vifaido, and they published their findings in the paper Surface Luminescence Dating on Some Egyptian Monuments. The result of this dating method shows that the pyramid of Khufu was built within the time frame mainstream archaeology suggests it was. So now we have two separate dating methods that return more or less the same time period. And maybe one of these methods by itself isn't as impressive as we might want it to be. But when we have multiple sources all pointing within the same direction, things start to become a little bit overwhelming on the evidence side. And we have yet to explore the evidence surrounding the pyramid. So let's broaden our perspective. And by that, we will start reviewing the two barges that was buried outside the pyramid complex. In 1954, a fantastic discovery was made. Archaeologists found two untouched boat pits that contained the remains of two complete ships, or at least what seemed to be complete vessels. One of the boats was left untouched and was just recently excavated. But the other pit was, in fact, excavated by then. And beneath a large limestone slab was a whole dismantled ship. But with the pieces placed in a position that it was easy to see how it was supposed to be a boat. So each piece laid where they were supposed to be within the boat construction. Each piece was then carefully removed from the pit and later assembled. Some 1,224 parts were found, and they had these U-shaped holes, so they could be, well, more or less stitched or weaved together, forming this large boat. When assembled, it measured some 43 meters or 142 feet. And an interesting little bit here is that in the front of the boat and also in the back, you see that it has almost like carved papyrus stalks. So what we see there is more or less a tradition that started with Djoser, that the ancient Egyptian tried to replicate organic reed structure in a more durable and enduring material. If you remember way back when we talked about Djoser's step pyramid, we spoke about how they, within this complex, were very keen to try to imitate reed pillars and other organic building materials that they had used previously in their construction. But instead of these organic materials, they did this with stone. While most Egyptologists and archaeologists believe that these are boat pits, of course there are some more exotic ideas about what these boat pits were used for. For example, Christopher Dunn thought this was a place for tools.
Dunn also believes that the large depressions in the ground at Giza are not boat pits, as is claimed by mainstream archaeologists, but were actually used to hold the 35-foot saws.
I speculate that they were actually saw pits. The saws were mounted in these pits, and that they ran the blocks through the saws before they put them in the Great Pyramid.
While this is a quite novel idea, the claim simply does not hold up, or not without first proving that giant electric miter saws were available to the ancient Egyptians. Yeah. So what were these bows used for then? And why were they disassembled? This is more relevant question we should ask ourselves, and there are some speculations about it. Some suggest that these vessels were for the symbolic transport of the dead pharaohs to the land of the dead. What speaks against this claim is that the boats were disassembled. If they were used for the purpose of, if the vessels were intended to be used to, well, ferry around the dead pharaoh in the afterlife, they would most likely have been left in one piece. A more likely explanation is that these were part of the funerary rite. So these ships were used to transport the dead pharaoh and possibly the pharaoh's ka statue to their final resting place. Now the boats, by doing this ritual, became imbued with powerful enchantments. And the ships were then disassembled and buried outside the funerary complex to try to neutralize the powerful magic that the ancient Egyptian believed exist within these ritual boats. And before you even ask, of course we have carbon-14 samples done on these boats. And guess what? They again correspond with the reign of Khufu. So we have yet another piece of evidence pointing towards both function and the date of the pyramid. After the break, we will turn to the Queen Pyramids and how they can be used to understand the site. Fellow archaeology lovers, science nerd, and history enthusiast, have you ever dreamt of showcasing your passion for our history and science? Dig no further. Welcome to the official merchandise store for your favorite podcast, Digging Up Ancient Aliens. Embark on a journey through time with our exclusive collection. Wrap yourself in the mysteries of the past with our range of themed shirts, mugs, and apparel. Each piece tells a story about your passions and podcast preference. And for the devoted archaeology aficionados, unveil our latest treasure, the Archaeology Mafia T-shirt. It is more than just apparel. It's a statement, a tribute to those who dig deeper, question the unknown, and unravel the secrets of our ancestors. These are not just merchandise. They are future relics from a time yet to be fully understood. Symbols of your dedication to unveiling the truth behind ancient aliens and the real wonders of our past. Join the crew of Digging Up Ancient Aliens, wear your curiosity, flaunt your knowledge, and join the Archaeology Mafia. Visit our store now and you will get an offer you can't refuse. Let's keep the spirit of exploration alive. Log on to diggingupancientaliens.com/store and grab your piece of history. Remember, the past is always present. Welcome back. And we can look at even more things on the Giza Plateau that will help us understand the Great Pyramid. For example, the Queen Pyramids behind Khufu's pyramid. So these are smaller pyramids, a little bit to the side. One of them is suspected to belong to Queen Maritetes. She lived quite a long life and was present both during the reign of Sneferu, Khufu, and Khafre. So the most southern pyramid of these Queen Pyramids is supposed to be Queen Hanuset. However, her name is only being preserved to us through later dynasties. Between the 21st and the 26th dynasty, the mortuary temple of this pyramid were rededicated to the goddess of Isis. And during this remodeling, the name of Queen Henuset was recorded. Then we have the third pyramid. And it was dedicated to Sneferu's wife and Khufu's mother, Hetepheres. What's fascinating about this tomb is that we have found the chamber of Hetepheres. Well, let's say somewhat intact. It is quite the story and a little bit of a mystery also. Mark Leher describes this very well in his book, The Complete Pyramid. And I can actually see this becoming a quite good movie, actually, both how it was found and even what did happen to Queen Hetepheres. So we have covered some physical evidence that's been left out by these pseudo-archaeological narratives. There's also material based on text that we have not looked at yet, making this next claim entirely irrelevant.
Archaeologists and Egyptologists claim that they were tombs for the pharaohs, and yet no Egyptian pharaoh was ever found in a pyramid in Egypt. We have found the mummies of many Egyptian pharaohs, but they're found in vaults deep underground at the Valley of the Kings in Luxor, hundreds of miles away from the pyramids. The pyramids have no real explanation of what their purpose was.
As I've mentioned before, there have been human remains found in Egyptian pyramids. Not necessarily the Great Pyramid, but other pyramids actually have had human remains within them from the time period that they were most likely constructed. But we don't require human remains to be there to see that this was supposed to be a burial. For example, human remains tend to decompose rather quickly in acidic soil. So in some locations, it's quite rare to find skeletal remains. But this doesn't mean we still can't identify the burial site in acidic soils. And this can be done through grave goods or mortuary architecture, such as building cairns or other grave markers like a pyramid. And then we need to acknowledge that the ancient Egyptian left written record detailing the purpose of the pyramid. So we don't actually have to speculate what they were used for. Unfortunately, there are no pyramid texts within the burials on the Giza Plateau. It wasn't until a few hundred years later that these texts start to appear carved inside the pyramids. And by saying that, I feel that I have to point out that Khufu's name has been found carved inside the pyramid by, you know, the work gangs building it in locations that's not really accessible and was accessed really late within our modern history. But the first pharaoh to incorporate the pyramid text into their tombs was King Unas, who reigned about 250 years after Khufu. And in his text we see quotes as, "Any gods who shall cause this pyramid and this construction of the king to be good and sturdy, is they who will be vital. It is they who will be respected. It is they who will be impressive. It is they who will be in control. It is they who will take possession of the crown." In a later pyramid text from Pepe I, we see similar quotes. He writes, "As for anyone who shall lay a finger on this pyramid and this temple, which belong to me and my double, he will be judged by Ennead, and he will be nowhere, and his house will be nowhere, and he will be proscribed, one who eats himself." Right, so these are just two quotes from the pyramid text. However, if we start to look through these pyramid texts, we will start to see five categories within this more extensive text corpus that are the pyramid texts. We have the dramatic texts, which include spells for various categories, such as lament and offerings. In the second category, we find hymns and name formulae. We have litanies in category 3. In category 4, it is all about glorifying the pharaoh. And then we have the magical text that protects the pharaoh from snakes, scorpions, or other dangerous beings. And these protection spells are most likely the oldest, but just it's that these versions are the only one preserved to our times. And suppose that you're interested in learning more about pyramid text and what's referred to as the Book of the Dead. In that case, I go through all of this in an earlier episode, that was episode 47, titled Mummies, Vampires, Draugrs, and Aliens. So based on all of this, we are able to safely assume that this was constructed as an intended burial for Pharaoh Khufu. But as luck would have it, recent excavations have shed even more light on the construction of the pyramids, and more about that after these short messages. Welcome back again. Now, the evidence that I mentioned was not really found in or around Giza. We actually have to travel quite a bit to the south of Egypt and to the coast of the Red Sea. Only 23 kilometers south of Safarna is an archaeological site called Wadi El Jarf. And this is a seaport that started to be excavated in 2011 by a team led by Mark Lehner and Pierre Tallet. Initially, nobody would really guess that this site would become such a vital find as it actually became. And I also want to mention that this section is mainly based on the book The Red Sea Scrolls, how ancient papyri revealed the secrets of the pyramids. For those interested in Egyptology, Tallet and Lehner's book offers a deeper understanding of the background and the significance of the site and the finds there. And I highly recommend reading this book at some point or another. What's interesting about Wadi El Jarf is that it wasn't a permanent settlement, and it was only used for a relatively brief period of Egyptian history. So the first time the site was used was during the reign of Sneferu, and in total it would be only used for about 70 years. And it was used during the reign of Khufu and later Khafre. But why? Why did they establish this seaport? As discussed briefly in the last episode, copper was necessary for the pyramid construction. Lehner and Teller explain the reason for the location as follow, quote,
The pharaonic state was therefore regularly obliged to organize a major expedition into the desert area that surrounded Egypt in order to obtain sufficient quantity of this raw material. There are copper mines in the Egyptian eastern desert, and some deposits in particular were exploited in ancient time in the Wadi Araba, a natural route leading directly to Wadi el-Jorf.
So, the seaport was constructed to be part of this expedition, and as things turns out, it seems this was one of the older ports constructed during the Old Kingdom. Lehner and Tellert also claim that there are several reasons for why this location was chosen in the first place. They write the following, again, quotes.
The site of Wadi el-Jarf has several advantages that make it suitable as the location for an intermittent port on the Red Sea coast. At the time when the Egyptians were clearly conducting their first experiments with this kind of installation, for the port to operate most efficiently, it was essential that there were access to supply of good drinking water, which was probably provided by a spring at what is now St. Paul's Monastery, 10 kilometers from the site.
So, this port itself is actually part of the evidence we have of the construction of the pyramid. But what sets this location aside from all the other places out there is what the team discovered here. While they found a lot of materials and equipment belonging to the workers, one discovery was maybe a little bit more critical to our understanding of the ancient Egyptian pyramid. The remains of papyri belonging to the bureaucratic administration of ancient Egypt. And most of you are probably already familiar with these documents. They are often referred to Merer's diary. And the archive they found consists of at least 5 papyri. And these are logbooks, and they are pretty detailed. So from the logs, we can tell that they most likely cover one calendar year that stretches from the 13th census of the reign of Khufu, and the 13 census correspond more or less with year 26 and 27 of Khufu's reign. And the logbook seems to also cover the beginning of the year corresponding with the 14th census. And these logbooks seem to focus mainly on one of the work gangs that worked on the pyramid construction. It was called the escort team of the Uraeus of Khufu is its prow. Quite a title there. This group of workers consists of about 160 men divided into several smaller groups or phylis. In Egyptian, these groups are referred to as za. The most known of these documents are papyri A, B, and C, and they are about a phyli or za called Great, or in Egyptian, Veret, led by this middle manager named Merer. And we know about this type of arrangement of workers from other sources and from other pyramid constructions. For example, we have a similar division in the construction of Pharaoh Menkaure's pyramid. From the sources we have, it seems as Menkaure's workforce consisted of some 2,000 people that was split up in 2 gangs comprised of 1,000 people each. And we even have the names of these 2 gangs. The first is called Friends of Menkaure, quite friendly and formal. And the second is the Drunkards of Menkaure. And these packs was then split into smaller groups or phyles and sas, as we noted here with Merer. Now, something interesting about the Red Sea Scroll is that none of the documents or logs we have found covers December through March. So Lehner and Tellert speculate that the workforce likely got some time off to be with their family during this time or go home, work on their farm. Of course, this indicates that the workers was pretty well cared for. They got vacation, they get time off. Most of Merer's logbook seems to cover his work prior, however, to arriving at Wadi el-Jorf. So initially, his team worked on delivering stone from the Tura quarry to the Great Pyramid. And if you recall back in previous episode, the Tura limestone is of exceptional quality and it was used for the casing stone that we found outside of the pyramid. And these logbooks, while important and interesting, is pretty dry. Important, but they are pretty dry. Most of the entries goes as follow, quote.
Day 25. Inspector Merrer spends the day with his filey hauling stones in Tora South. Spends the night at Tora South. Day 26. Inspector Merrer casts off with his file from Tora South, loaded with stone for Akit Khufu. Spends the night at Shi Khufu. Day 27. Sets sail from Shi Khufu to sails towards Akit Khufu, loaded with stones. Spends the night at Akit Khufu.
Right, and these parts are maybe not the most thrilling read that you will do, but it gives us a great insight on how the stones were delivered to the Great Pyramids and how long things took. Some entries are a bit more detailed. Lerner describes the entries as, quote,
Merrer only seemed to expand the scope of his reports when, for one reason or another, the team departs from the standard routine of work. This happened, for example, in Papyrus B, when Merrer does not return at expected time to deliver a load of stone from Tura. The reason being that in the meantime, he had obviously been requisitioned to undertake a task elsewhere at Rushi Khufu that had not previously been planned. Consequently, he finds it necessary to report the delay.
So these papyri demonstrate how well organized the Egyptian bureaucracy and the society was back then. They got everything down to timetables. And if you read these papyri, you will also note that they will write with black and red ink to separate different posts within their basically spreadsheets that they have. These documents also confirm that the ancient Egyptians built canals from the Nines to the Giza Plateau. So from Merrer's description, it seems as if they unload the Torah limestone at the Valley Temple, indicating that the causeway that went from the temple to the pyramid function as a ramp for the Tura limestone deliveries. Merrer also described how they dug canals and other work that was needed to make this transport, well, flow as planned. So these documents are a treasure trove and one of the key pieces within the puzzle that is the Great Pyramid. From these papyri, we also learn that the pyramid was built by and for Khufu as his final resting place. With all this information covered, it's really tough to argue that the pyramids of ancient Egypt were not burial. But I yet want to bring up one last claim by the ancient astronaut theorists, because this is one that you will so often see when you go on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, because it's one of the most common things that they like to talk about regarding the pyramids.
When you look at a Great Pyramid as a schematic, for me, it looks like a machine. Well, if that's the case, what did this machine do? I propose that the Egyptians built the Great Pyramid to be a power plant, and the pyramids were actually geomechanical devices. In other words, they were attached to the earth, they were tuned to vibrate with the frequencies of the earth, and they converted the energies of the earth into electromagnetic energy.
Right, so something that's interesting about the Great Pyramid is that it has three separate chambers. We have one chamber that goes down into the bedrock, a second chamber that's between the bottom and the top one, and then we have the burial chamber quite high up in the pyramid. And it's only the Great Pyramid that really have this layout of chambers. And it's only Khufu has his chamber this high up in the pyramid. The Ensuring Pyramid Construction Museum after usually have their chambers grouped towards the bottom, not down in the bedrock, but not as high up in the pyramid as Khufu has it. And while these three chambers might look strange in how they are set up, they aren't that strange if you're familiar with Egyptian mortuary architecture. If you look at the previous and again the following burial chambers, we see a similar concept. Not the same layout, but similar concept. We have three chambers. Even if they are not split up as Khufu did, we still have three separate chambers that we can see. One seems to be the burial chamber, where we have the sarcophagus and all of that. And then we have a chamber for the Ka statue. And then we have a third chamber. Mark Leher writes about the third chamber in the Great Pyramid, Quote,
there is evidence, however, that all three chambers were planned from the beginning based on a long tradition before and after Khufu of royal tombs having three chambers. If so, what then are the purpose of the subterranean chamber? Some Egyptologists suggest that its rough, unfinished state may indicate a link to the chaotic aspect of the afterlife, making it an earthly symbolic representation of the underworld cavern.
So if we look back at all of our evidence, Dunn's theories simply do not hold up. The ancient alien theories have not demonstrate that this type of engine built in stone is even theoretical possible. And while speculation can be fun, there needs to be at least a little bit of evidence at one point or another for us to really take this claim seriously. Egyptology have collected evidence for centuries at this point, and all the data, as you see, points towards these structures being burials for the kings. Even if we look at only the Great Pyramid, things do not align with what the ancient Osnar supporters say, nor do they make a good case for discrediting the evidence other than claiming it does not exist or it is a mystery, or look into a single point that's not really relevant at this state of our investigation of all of this. So, where do these leaves us? Well, from everything that we have, from everything that we have seen, the Egyptian pyramids were built by an organized and well-equipped workforce. They were taken care of and seem to have put a lot of pride in their work. We don't need aliens or Atlanteans to explain this construct. All the evidence points in the same direction. While there are some gaps in the story, like what exact ramp structure were used in the Great Pyramid, there are ample theories that work much better with what we actually know than levitation guns, as suggested by the ancient alien people. It's not a question whether a ramp were being used at this point, because we have found them. We have seen them in location. They are there. We just don't know, did it spiral inside, outside? Was it one long? Was it several shorter? Because if we look at the pyramid, you will note that there are bigger stone in the bottom and smaller stone at the top, something indicating that you pulling something up up a ramp or something, because if you had a levitation device and, you know, electric saws, you would most likely just do them all the same size, because it doesn't matter what size they are, because you can just boop them into place. But yeah, there we have it. The mystery of the pyramid is an illusion created by those who benefit by having it that way, simply. Isn't that a little bit ironic in this case? Now, until next time, please spread the word by leaving a positive review on platforms like iTunes, Spotify, or to your friends. Share an episode you likes with them and get them hooked on the show that way. Over at diggingupancientaliens.com, you find a extensive list on all the sources and resources and a little bit of reading recommendation if you want to learn more or to double check what I told you. Now, if you want to support the show, head over to patreon.com/diggingupancientaliens. If you prefer, you can sign up for a membership instead at diggingupancientaliens.com/support. Both routes will give you early and free episodes and bonus content. And you can also support the APN network by going to archaeologicalpodcastnetwork.com and sign up as a member there and access all the shows in the network that way. If you want to contact me, it can be done through most social media sites or by sending an email to frederick@diggingupancientaliens.com. Sandra Martelor create the intro music and are outraised by the excellent band called Transcruve, who sings their song Tinfoil Hat. Links to both of these artists can be found in the show notes. Until next time, keep showing that science. Det är en galen fantasi att aliens manipulerar oss med telepati. Ni tycker att jag redan är besatt, men jag skyddar mig för jag har foliehatt. Och så säger ni, Thank you for tuning in and listening to this episode. Remember that we have a subscription going on. You can become a patron or other subscriber for as little as $2.50 per episode. Go to diggingupancientaliens.com/support. That is, go to diggingupancientaliens.com/support to read more information and sign up right there.